fighting like the Dickens over there in Ukraine, aren't they? Kind of puts the words courage, sacrifice, and freedom in perspective, huh? God bless the Ukrainian people. No matter the outcome, we're all praying for you. What do you do when a terrorist decides he wants to take your country just because he can? Fight like hell, I guess. Fight like hell. What would the rest of the world do? Thanks for joining me. And thanks so much for the incredibly strong support for my last episode. Some of the best numbers I've ever gotten in 1 week. Thank you. Thank you to everyone who felt the need to point out to me that at the beginning of the episode, I said March 21st instead of February 21st. So thank you. Thank you for feeling the need to call me a dummy and correct me about that. Everything I said in that episode that you could have commented on, you chose to tell me I got the date wrong. Thanks. Thanks a lot. Keep the comments coming. So today is Tuesday, March 1st. Black History Month is over, so we can finally go back to watching BET for entertainment purposes and not to be activist. So that's good. So in this episode, I'm going to talk a little more about Ukraine. Not going to spend a whole lot of time, but I'll talk a little bit about it. There's plenty of commentary going on about Ukraine out there right now, probably by people that are better than me that can give better detailed daily information. But I want to talk a little bit about some interesting new information that I found. And maybe this information is common knowledge and it was already out there, but it came as a bit of a surprise to me. And I find that a lot of times things that I don't know about tends to mean other people didn't know about it as well. So we'll talk a little bit about that in relation to Ukraine and what led up to the invasion by Russia and what possibly was Europe's role in all of this. But before I start on that, let me just ask you a question. Has the media's coverage of the first few days of the invasion been, how can I put it? Does it appear the media is painting a narrative of a feel-good David versus Goliath movie? On one hand, reporting that Ukrainians are taken to the streets and fiercely defending their country is great, but after a few days, just a few days, saying that Putin is bogged down, Russian troops are being repelled, Putin is growing frustrated. It's been what, 5-6 days? And this narrative in the media started almost on day one. I heard the host on MSNBC, on Morning Joe, joking, it's like trying to take over Texas. They got plenty of guns and a bad attitude. And listen, it's true. You know, I think Russia's in for a fight. But it's a little early to start building a narrative that Ukraine is holding out and Putin is stymied. It's a little early for that. You couldn't take over Brooklyn in a week. You know that. Russia, they couldn't take over Brooklyn in a week. Half their army would get hit by buses on day one. Not on purpose, by accident. Could Russia take over Philadelphia? Philly? Come on. Santa Claus barely makes it out of Philly every year, and I think they like him. So I'm just a little worried that this optimistic media narrative in less than a week of an invasion may cause Putin to get more aggressive in his attacks on civilians. In addition, I think the media should report the reality of the invasion, not try to spin a feel-good narrative. The reality is the invasion just started, and there's probably a strategy, as I heard one military expert say. You take the airports, you take the bridges, you take control of the media. So is Putin bogged down, or is he just following the invasion checklist that you always go by? I mean, after all, He's a savvy guy. Oh, there I go. All right, let's deal with it. Dumb Donald left one word out. That's all. That's all he did. He left one word out. If you heard the audio, what Donald Trump was saying, why am I going to do this? I can't do this. Why am I going to? Listen, here's the thing. Evil. He should have said the word evil. Vladimir Putin is an evil genius. I called Donald Trump a couple shows back an arch criminal. Well, same thing with Putin. He's an arch criminal. Okay? Like in the comics, like in the movies, every arch criminal is a super genius. They're an evil genius. So if Dumb Donald had just said Vladimir Putin is an evil genius, he's a savvy evil genius, it would have made a lot more sense. But of course, Donald Trump can't put two sentences together without offending someone. But the media missed it. Everyone on Twitter missed it. And I missed it myself because it was almost like I was trying to defend Donald Trump when I said, no, you got to listen to the clip. That's not how he said it. When he said Putin was a peacemaker, he was more being sarcastic, saying, oh, yeah, right, he's a peacemaker. And he didn't necessarily call Vladimir Putin a genius or call Vladimir Putin savvy. He was saying this is a savvy move or this is a smart move. So the left, they pounced on that and they missed the bigger picture. The bigger picture is, once again, Donald Trump showed us this man has zero empathy. Zero. That was the bigger picture. If you listen to that clip, it's like Donald Trump is watching a chess match and he says, oh, no, that was a savvy move. That was a genius move. But he wasn't. He wasn't talking about a chess match. He was talking about a war where people are going to be killed. But his default position in his brain is always zero empathy. That, to me, was the big picture of that audio clip. That's all I got to say about that. And if you have no idea what I'm talking about, consider yourself lucky and just keep on living your life that you didn't get caught up once again in the Trump circus. Now, here's some new information I found about recent history of Ukraine and what may have led up or partly contributed to the lead up of this invasion by Russia. And I gave you some background about the Ukraine invasion, what led up to it, what the conditions were prior to it, and how things related to NATO. And I got a little curious. By the way, for some information that you may be interested in, I was interested in comparative armies. Ukraine has 250,000 active duty troops. If you include the paramilitary reserves, blah, 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 takes them up to about 500,000. Russia has roughly about 850,000 active duty troops. So that's the difference in the militaries, if you were wondering. I was. So when I was Googling, I was curious about that, but I was also curious, how come Ukraine isn't part of NATO? Because I knew one of the reasons, or one of the ways you get into NATO is you have to have a military. So I was curious about what's Ukraine's military like, but then I was curious, how come they're not in NATO? And I was also curious, I also tweeted out, why not just put them in NATO now? Why not do that? Why not just make them a provisional member, a temporary member, or whatever you want to call it, member of NATO right now? We can do whatever we want. Do whatever we want. Well, you can say, oh, you can't. That's against the rules. Invading another sovereign country is against the rules. So why not put Ukraine in NATO now and give them more military support than we're giving them? Well, apparently, other people were curious because I found an article from the Miami Herald. Let me read from the article for you. This article is from February 25th, so just a few days ago, and it's entitled, Why is Ukraine Not in NATO and Is It Too Late to Join? Ukraine is not a NATO member. Here's why experts say. NATO has an open-door policy for members to join. Any European country in a position to further the principles of the Washington Treaty and contribute to security in the Euro-Atlantic area can become a member of the alliance. At the invitation of the North Atlantic Council, NATO says, NATO's line has always been the door is open to membership to any state that chooses that it wants to join NATO. It makes that choice independently. Then there is a process and criteria to follow. In 1995, the alliance published requirements that countries seeking NATO membership should fulfill. These include a functioning democratic political system based on a market economy, the fair treatment of minority populations, a commitment to peaceful resolution of conflicts, the ability and willingness to make a military contribution to NATO operations, a commitment to democratic civilian military relations, and blah, blah, blah. So the basic point is that Ukraine's choice. Now, in practical terms, absorbing a nation with a simmering conflict with unresolved territorial disputes would obviously be difficult for NATO, because NATO then absorbs that conflict. Why isn't Ukraine a NATO member already? Well, the long and short of it, they've been in the middle of a conflict. Now, getting right down to business without going through this whole article. It basically says that Russia stoked the conflict. This is what Russia does. It's Russia's strategy. In order to prevent countries like NATO, like Ukraine from joining NATO, they stoke conflicts knowing NATO won't allow a country to join if you have a civil war, if you have a conflict going on in the region. In addition to that, certain countries in Europe looked the other way while Russia was stoking these conflicts because they wanted to do business with Russia. Oh, how about that? Interesting. So in other words, there were times in the past when Ukraine could have been admitted to NATO, could have become a member NATO, but certain European countries voted against it or discouraged it because they were hoping to have a closer relationship, which, let's be honest, that means a closer economic relationship with Russia. And they also allowed Russia to interfere in Ukraine as well as other countries, Belarus, Georgia, like we talked about in the last show. So isn't that interesting? Now, it's great to see all the European countries coming out and supporting Ukraine in their time of need, sending weapons, supporting sanctions and things like that. But it's also interesting to find out that a lot of this may have been avoided if the European countries weren't putting profits ahead of protecting Ukraine's independence. I found it to be very interesting. So Putin, the savvy evil genius, understands as long as Ukraine and other countries in the region, for that matter, are experiencing civil unrest, they can't be part of NATO. Donald Trump was right about one thing. This would have never happened if he was president. No, because he would have handed Ukraine to Putin in exchange for rights to put a golf course in Kyiv. Let me move on to discuss the economy. Wait, before I move off of Ukraine, let me respond directly to Joy Ann Reid from MSNBC. She called me out directly in my imagination because she doesn't know who I am. But let me pretend that I'm responding directly to Joy Ann Reid because of a tweet that she sent out. Let me find a tweet. Let me read the tweet to you. Here we go. Anyone claiming that what Putin is doing to Ukraine is due to Biden's quote-unquote weakness should just go ahead and admit that to you, strength, quote-unquote strength, means kissing Putin's behind and letting him break up NATO and take Ukraine without American opposition, because that was Trump's policy. So that's what Joanne Reed says. Now, I'm responding directly to her because I suggested that maybe what was going on was partly because of a perceived weakness by Joe Biden. I did suggest that in my last show. Is it okay to do that, Joanne Reed? We're not allowed to suggest that maybe Joe Biden might appear a little weak right now, that NATO might appear a little weak right now, that Europe might appear a little weak right now. I'm not allowed to suggest that, to question that, to consider that may be partly responsible for the invasion by Putin. Suggesting that makes me a Trump sycophant? Oh, no, I'm far from it. Suggesting that makes me admire Vladimir Putin for his strength? No, far from it. I wish someone would kick Vladimir Putin and those Russians right in their vodka-filled balls. But why does suggesting that the United States or Europe or NATO could do more somehow make you a Trumpster or make you love Russia? Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, wishes the United States, Europe, and NATO would do more. He would never come right out and say it, but I think he thinks Biden looks a little weak and wishes he would do more. He said it. He thinks they should do stronger sanctions. I'm quite sure he would like to have more military support. Does that make him a Trumpster? Does that make Zelensky a Trumpster? So calm down, Joanne Reed from MSNBC. Every time somebody has a difference of opinion from yours, doesn't mean you have to fly into some hyperbolic rage. I'm going to start calling you Joanne Tucker Reed. Where was I? Oh, yeah, the economy. Now, I'm sure Biden will talk a lot about it at the State of the Union speech. What we accomplish, the greatest job creation in history, a fantastic unemployment number. When I came in the office, everyone in America was out of work, drinking rainwater to survive. And now, because of my administration and the actions we took, everyone has a private plane, but we got a lot more work to do. Oh, boy. We all know what he'll say. Everyone's doing great. Wages are way up. Corporations are making record profits. People are back to work. The American economy is firing on all cylinders again. Say it with a lot of gusto. Hold for 25 minutes for applause from the Democrats while the Republicans sit there and look like Joe Biden just farted in an elevator. Okay. So that's the good news. Everything is going great. Here's the bad news. Everybody's struggling. People are struggling. And the big reason for that is inflation. This doggone inflation, which Biden will blame on the pandemic, lack of competition, corporate greed, and unethical behavior by big business. He'll say it's due to supply chain issues because, again, there's a ton of demand because people got money to spend. That's the good news. But there's a lack of supply because people got killed by the pandemic or afraid to go back to work because of the pandemic. You know, the pandemic, Biden has done a fantastic job of stopping. That's the good news. Now, listen, I'm not here to say any of that is untrue. All of it's true to a degree. To a degree, I just think it's funny how the Democrats want to have it both ways. We're doing great, but people need our help. They're struggling. This is why Democrats struggle so much in the polls on the economy. If the economy is so good, why do people need so much help? You know, I know they like to say, well, it's an economy that's working, but it's not working for everyone. Well, maybe some people aren't working it the right way. Maybe some people aren't working hard enough. Oh, don't you dare. Don't you dare say that to someone on the left. You can't even consider that. No, the economy's doing great, but people are still struggling. And the economy's doing great because of us, because of the Democrats. If people are struggling, it's because of the Republicans. People doing great, that's us. People struggling, that's the Republicans. I saw a tweet that said 97% of jobs in the past, I think it was 40 years, have been created under Democratic administrations. Let me say that again. The tweet said 97% of job creation in the last 40 years have been created under Democratic administrations. Now, if that's true, Democrats, you got to ask yourself, how does a Republican ever get elected? So I tried to fact check the claim. I wasn't able to find a source I didn't think was maybe biased. So I would probably say it's mostly true, but needs some clarification and context. You know, if you took out the millions of jobs lost under George W. Bush and then recovered under Obama, if you took out the millions of jobs lost under Trump and have since been recovered under Biden, would the difference be so stark? Isn't fair to assume the jobs would have been recovered if McCain was elected or even if Trump were reelected? Come on. Come on now. I'm not cheerleading one side or the other. I'm putting it in context. That's what you're supposed to do when you're in the middle. But still, recovery under Democrats, right? So why do people seem to always say they trust Republicans more with the economy? Now, there are a bunch of reasons, but in the interest of time, I'm going to try and stay focused. Democrats struggle with messaging on the economy because, in my humble opinion, they prioritize help from the government as a way to build a strong economy. You will hear it from Biden, and every Democrat will leap out of their seats when he says it, and every Republican will look at him like he just said, the Second Amendment should be optional. But you'll hear it. He'll say, We need to lower the cost of prescription drugs. We need to lower the cost of childcare. We need to lower the cost of college. We need to lower the cost of insulin. We need to lower the cost of Netflix. Everything. Anything and everything you need, we need to lower the cost of. Give people more money to spend, and the economy will do better. Cut the cost of all these things that people have to pay for. They'll have more money to spend, and the economy will do better. Republicans do not agree. Republicans feel if you want to give more people more money to spend, take less money from them. That's how Republicans feel. You want people to have more money to spend? Take less from them in the form of taxes. In other words, spend way less on your social programs, and you can then tax people way less, and they will have more money to spend on childcare, insulin, and college. Now, stay with me. I'm not getting into a detailed discussion of who's right and who's wrong. Because again, if you listen to me enough, you'll realize I generally think no matter what the issue, there's some right and there's some wrong on both sides. But I'm not going to get distracted with that. I'm staying focused here. This is about why do Democrats do so poorly in the polls on this? Okay? So if you ask people, let's say between the ages of 16 and 25, where do you see yourself in 10 years? How many do you think would say, waiting for Biden to pass a bill to help me pay for childcare, prescription drugs, food, housing, heating oil? All the things the government wants to give people, people don't want to admit they need or want. What they'll admit is, or what they'll say is, where I see myself in 10 years, what I need in 10 years, a tax cut, because I'm going to be a millionaire by then. I'm going to be an influencer, or I'm going to be starting a clothing line or a record label. Or I'll get a job right out of college where I start at the top, not at the bottom, where people used to start. That's the mentality. The Republican economy is one where I am successful and I need a tax cut. The Democratic economy is one where I'm not successful and I need help. Again, not right or wrong. It's the perception. It's the perception. Which economy do you want to say you support? The one where you're successful and need a tax cut, or the one where you're unsuccessful and need help? The Democrats are trying to sell people things they don't want or admit they need. What? Are you trying to tell me people don't want to admit they want childcare? People don't want to admit they didn't want all those kids. Maybe one or two, but not six. They don't even want to admit they didn't want those kids, much less the childcare to take care of them. You want to poll better on the economy? Change the perception you're giving away goodies to people who don't deserve them in order to get them to vote for you. You want to change the perception in the polls? Never talk about giving someone something without it being connected to taxes, to a tax cut, to a tax credit, to a tax rebate. You're getting this because you deserve it. You're not getting it just because you had kids. You're getting it because you deserve it. You're getting this tax credit. How do you give somebody a tax credit who doesn't pay any taxes? How do you give a billionaire a tax credit? Come on, Democrats, wake up. Wake up. You got to start figuring out how to play this game. I can't keep telling you. I told you I got toilets to clean. Now, you want to change the perception? You want to pull better on the economy? Stop saying we need to win back the white working class vote. Stop calling them that. Why would the white working class be any different than the black working class or the Latino working class or suburban working moms or people with a high school degree? Why would their needs in an economy be any different based on race or sex or whether their kids play soccer? The goals are the same. Pay me more, take from me less. Pay me more, take from me less. Put that on a bumper sticker if you want to. I know you won't give me credit. Go ahead. Put it on a bumper sticker, put a big Democratic donkey on the bumper sticker, and you'll go up 2 points in the polls on the economy. I promise you. Pay me more, take from me less. Okay, comparison group guy. I get the take from me less part. I'm starting to pick up what you're putting down. But the pay me more part, isn't that up to these greedy businesses? Yes. I could talk about this total lack of understanding from the left, but in the interest of time, I have to try and stay focused on here. When it comes to pay, businesses pay people based on value, not hard work. Businesses pay people based on value, not hard work. Businesses employ people based on demand, not because the Fed really would like them to. If I only need 50 people to deliver my product or service, I don't hire and employ 60. Heck, I don't employ 51 if I need 50. I saw a well-known economist on the left. I'm sure some people will call him an expert economist. Robert Reich tweeted something out about Jeff Bezos and his multi-million dollar estate and his insane wealth as he nickel and dimed his employees, taking away their overtime and their benefits and so forth. So I have to ask this expert economist, what does that have to do with the economy? If you want to have a moral debate, which you know we don't do here, we have discussions, but if you want to have a moral debate about Jeff Bezos, okay, but Amazon, McDonald's, Walmart, or any other mega-rich company that is always the example of corporate greed is under no obligation to be super cool to their employees. People are paid and rewarded based on value. Think of a supermodel, a Victoria's Secret supermodel. You could take a very attractive woman off the street, tell her, sit here and watch this Victoria's Secret supermodel walk the runway for an hour, and then you're going to do it. Compared to the supermodel, the attractive woman off the street will look like Steve Bannon in a wig, and her walk will look like a newborn pony trying not to fall down a flight of stairs. And that's the value of a supermodel. And it's why they are paid a ridiculous amount of money. Do they work harder than, say, a teacher? Of course not. Is there value to society more than that of a teacher? Of course not. Their value is they generate millions of dollars in sales because of their beauty and their skill. Ah, their value is they generate millions. Do you individually at your job generate millions and dollars in sales? Well, yeah, Amazon makes billions. And if I'm not there, well, then, right. If you're not there, someone else will be there to do the job. Or in the future, maybe something else will be there to do the job. That's your value. That's your pay. I could go on about this for hours, literally hours. I've heard so many crazy things from the left on this misunderstanding of pay being about hard work versus value. I heard someone one time say, when the Professional Women's Basketball League was struggling. This is when they first, I think the first iteration of the Women's Professional Basketball League. And they said, well, if they would just pay the women more, they would get a better result and fans would show up. Well, what? You think the women's skill set will go up and the games will be more entertaining just by paying them more? But that's what somebody on the left said. I can't make that up. Why has my voice been so high this entire show? I got to calm down. Hang on. Let me calm down. Let me get my voice lower. All right, here we go. I got to wrap up. I could go on about this forever. I wanted to talk about unions. Maybe next time. I'm going to wrap up because I want to save a little time for a non-political moment in the show. Biden is going to give his State of the Union address tonight. The job numbers will be out this Friday. So things are going to get very political, very partisan. So in response, I want to give you my non-political list of people I want out of this country. Okay? You ready? Number one, list of people I want out of the country, non-political. People who go into a public bathroom, wash their hands, and then grab a huge stack of paper towels to dry them like they're a grizzly bear grabbing a trout out of a stream. Take a couple of paper towels, you selfish prick. Number two, people who wait until the cashier tells them how much it's going to be before they open their purse or wallet. It's going to be something. Trust me, it's going to be something. You can probably even estimate what it's going to be and take some form of currency out of your pocket. You don't have to wait to see. I've even seen people who are paying with a debit card wait to take the debit card out until they are told the total. Get out of my country. Number three, people who are real loud and obnoxious all throughout dinner at a public restaurant, and then when the bill comes, they get real quiet all of a sudden. They sit there real quiet and try and go unnoticed when the bill comes. Meanwhile, they were screaming across the table, spitting in your food all throughout dinner. What? What do you mean I'm like that? What am I up to? Number four, people who litter. Oh my stars, do I hate people who litter. If you told me a cop shot someone for littering, I would say, well, was it a first offense? Are they habitual litterers? I mean, it's not even about the environment for me. It's just such a lazy, uncaring attitude. You can't wait until you get to where you're going. I'm sure there's going to be a trash can somewhere, and you can throw it out in the trash can. Why do you have to litter? Well, what about things that are biodegradable? Can I throw chicken wings or apple cores or cigarettes out of my car? Poop is biodegradable. Can I throw that at your face? Wait until you get where you're going, you animal. Number five, I think I'm up to. People I want out of the country. People who take a huge duffel bag in with them to the gym. You're going to work out. You're not going to live abroad for a semester. What could you possibly need with that huge bag? Is that your go bag? Like you're in a born supremacy? You got to have extra passports and cash while you're working out your deltoids just in case something pops off? Lastly, people who end sentences with prepositions. You might be the worst of all. People who end sentences with prepositions. For example, that's the place he was going to be at. I'll let you know what we are going to do after. I ain't been able to see straight since. I don't like that. I don't like people who end sentences with prepositions. And don't get me started on dangling participles. All the ladies, if you feel me, help me sing it out. That's a long one. I bet you didn't know where this show was going to end at. It's O-R-E-Y. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter @comparison_show. @comparison_show. Visit the website www.thecomparisongroup.com. www.thecomparisongroup.com. You will find other podcast episodes. You will find fact checks. You will find sources of information. Again, I appreciate people going to the website. I do. But I just wish you'd go to Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Amazon Music, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify. All I can do is suggest it. You go there, you subscribe to any of those platforms, and the show comes to you. Subscribe, enable notification, show comes to you for free. Don't have to go looking for it. But hey, who am I to tell you where to listen to the show? Listen wherever you want to listen. It's fine by me. It just helps me, I think, if you subscribe. Makes the show appear to be popular if I have subscribers. Then I can make some money. Now, I'm not looking to make a ton of money. And oh, by the way, I think there are people who may be somewhat famous, but they don't want to really share the show. I don't know. I'm saying that without any knowledge whatsoever of any famous person. Quiet down, Beyonce. No knowledge of any famous person. But if there is anyone out there who has some notoriety and they've heard the show and they're nervous to share the show or retweet the show because they don't know who I am, well, you don't know who I am because I have no desire whatsoever to be famous. It's as simple as that. But if you need a bio, if you need some background on me, here it is. I clean toilets and I started a podcast. That's it. That's the bio. Nothing else. I'm not a secretly grand dragon in the Ku Klux Klan. I have no controversial background to speak of. So feel free. Feel free to share the show. I promise you, you won't get in trouble for it. I don't want to be famous, but I would like to make money. Just enough money, as I've said, to be above the law. That's all. Just enough to be above the law. So I assume that would be OJ-type money. Now, OJ wasn't an incredibly wealthy man. He had a couple $1 million, but he wasn't insanely rich. So that's all I need. Just enough to be above the law, just like OJ. So help me out if you could. But as always, thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.